for more information. And by Affordable Automotive, repairing and maintaining all makes of cars, trucks, and SUVs since 1996. Located at 2106 Park Avenue in Chico, Affordable Automotive offers pickup and delivery service with financing also available. Appointments at 892-1774 and at chicoautomotive.com. Affordable Automotive is also looking for technicians to join their team. Call Mike Button at 892-1774 for details. And hey, if you enjoyed Fresh Hop Cinema, you can now go to kzfr.org and tip this show. Have a great night.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR, Chico, California. Listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond, and on kzfr.org. And stay tuned for the Doctor's Inn. Let's listen to a little Loudon Wainwright III, the Doctor.
And the doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle and you're losing the fight. To the doctor and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple, it's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse, don't spill it now. I went to the doctor, doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could.
Hello, this is Ken Logan. I'm a family practice doctor here in Chico, California. And you're listening to The Doctor's Inn. What I do is a radio show called The Doctor's Inn. And it's the third Thursday of each month. It's from 6 to 7 in the evening. And I like to cover subjects that I think are important for all of us to be on the same page relative to. And that means in health and medical issues. I am interested in also bringing up or discussing medical or health areas that you would like me to. And so you could contact me if you so chose to. And that would be by email, K Logan, that's the letter K, K Logan, L-O-G-A-N, M-D at yahoo.com. Just identify yourself and say you heard the doctor's in and you were wanting wondering if I'd cover a certain subject. I'd be happy to do that. I want you to know at this time that on the Doctor's Inn, the opinions voiced on this program don't necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. They're my opinions, actually. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001. Friends of the Arts creates economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and by publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or to have things listed, visit friendsoftheart.net. And by Drunken Dumpling in Chico. First created as a food cart, Drunken Dumpling is now a dine-in restaurant serving locally sourced, fresh, handmade, Asian fusion comfort food at 1414 Park Avenue, Suite 120, just behind Nobby's. Open 11 in the morning to 9 at night. Details on Facebook, Instagram, and DrunkenDumplingChico.com. Drunken Dumpling, where they love food, flavor, and our community. And by D.A. Lampe Construction, and Lampe is L-A-M-P-E, a proud supporter of KZFR and Community Radio in Northern California. For more information, visit D.A. Lampe, and that's L-A-M-P-E, dalampeconstruction.com. All right, now on to a radio show. And you're probably wondering, hey, what's the subject matter of this radio show called The Doctor's Inn today? First of all, I want to wish you all a happy St. Patrick's Day. I was thinking of doing this trying to do an Irish brogue for the show. Then I decided I wouldn't understand it and you'd laugh at me and stuff. And I give you enough to laugh at anyway, so I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to try to do it in a brogue. Okay, so first of all, I'm going to talk about blood pressure. And please don't yawn because, I'm going to talk about some stuff, so listen up in a minute. But then if I have time, I'm going to talk about our COVID status and some issues about COVID that I thought were interesting to bring up. And then and just a little news blips on that. But I'm not sure how far into that I'm going to get. And I might even give some latest advice on colorectal cancer screening. But I'll see how the time goes here. Okay. What does the term blood pressure mean, and why would we even care about it? So when I first started putting my ideas together to do this little talk on the show, I was thinking, gosh, this will be pretty simple. Then when I started really putting my thoughts together, I realized that the issue of blood pressure is a bit convoluted and not necessarily straightforward. It isn't. Especially when it comes to advice to give people on air, like a radio show like this. In other words, information for the general public, when I'm not sitting, you know, in an office with one-on-one with a particular individual patient, person. But to the general public, it's a little convoluted. So I'm going to try to straighten it all out and have us all get on the same page today. And it's important. By the way, this is an important subject, and I'm going to tell you why that is, too, in a few minutes. So, again, blood pressure is one of those subjects where it's best if we were all on the same page relative to facts and advice, not only for ourselves as individuals, but for, you know, our family members and loved ones that we care for, and especially those in the older age groups. So blood pressure means we're defining what the pressure is inside the arteries of the body, within the arteries, not within our veins, but within our arteries. The pressure inside the veins is something else and not quite as acute a problem, and we're just not going to talk about that today. Now, I'm going to define what arteries are, and as a matter of fact, I am going to define the job of both arteries and veins. So arteries and veins are our blood vessels. They are doing the distinct job of carrying our blood around our body to and from all areas of our body. So there's a pump doing that pumping of the blood, isn't there, through these blood vessels. And what's the name of that pump? Yes, it's the heart. Our good old heart is doing the pumping job. And the blood vessels that carry the blood directly from the heart out to all the areas of the body are our arteries. Then the blood vessels that carry the blood back to our heart are the veins. So arteries carry the blood to everywhere, and the veins carry everything back from everywhere. There's additional details relative to the lungs playing a role in there, and that'd be interesting, but I'm not going to go into that today. Now back to the arteries. So the pressure inside all of the arteries in our body is called our blood pressure. So that's what blood pressure is. A person's blood pressure level varies throughout each 24 hours of our life, you know, going up and down to a degree throughout our day and night. Not big, gigantic ups and downs, but more subtle ups and downs. But nonetheless, there are for sure ups and downs in our blood pressure in all of us. Much higher when we're doing things like exercise or other activity, and lower generally when we're at rest. Not only does exercise temporarily raise our blood pressure, but also some other things do, such as stress and emotional ups and downs, for instance. And those things, stress and emotional ups and downs, affect our blood pressure partly because of, the effect that our stress hormones have on blood pressure. Our stress hormones generally come, the ones I'm generally talking about, come from the adrenal glands, like adrenaline, which is epinephrine, and norepinephrine, and cortisol. So our blood pressure is not constant, same pressure all the time kind of thing, but rather is, to a degree at least, a pressure that goes up and down a bit over minutes and hours of every day and night. What I see as a doctor in the office or wherever I'm seeing patients is that we are all different too. We're all, different in how sensitive each of us as individuals, how sensitive our blood pressures are to things like stress. Some of us seem to be more sensitive than others relative to the degree of change that happens with our blood pressures relative to things like stress and emotions. Now, I suspect some of you are listeners are thinking some questions such as, how often should we test our blood pressure and who should do it and what age and what's the accuracy of home blood pressure devices and what are the numbers for normal blood pressure? So, okay, I'll get to those kind of points. But but first, I want to hit what kind of problems can arise from problems with the blood pressure, either too low blood pressure or too high blood pressure over years, over time. And by the way, acutely or right nowly is when low blood pressures are a problem, generally, which we'll talk about. And generally, most of the time, when we're dealing with high blood pressures, it's a problem of high blood pressures over years. So listen up. I'm going to get into that a little more closely here in a minute. So first, let's take the issue of low blood pressure and the possible consequences of too low a blood pressure. So, first of all, the consequences of blood pressure that's too low first relates to the effect that it has on the person's brain. When the blood pressure is too low, the brain's not getting enough adequate blood supply to work adequately. The brain just isn't. And the person gets from that lightheaded feeling. Lightheaded, like they're feeling like they may pass out. And they can kind of get it stopped in their tracks relative to their brain not being able to not function right and them not being able to think adequately. Depending on the degree of lowness, the person's brain function problem could proceed to the person even passing out, losing consciousness. Ain't good. That is not a good thing, obviously. So passing out from having a low blood pressure, from whatever cause of low blood pressure, is a serious problem, of course. It's serious from the function standpoint, that is, depending on what the person was doing, it was in the middle of doing at the time the blood pressure got low. But also it's a serious problem because, depending on the specific cause of the low blood pressure episode, the actual cause of low blood pressure could then potentially proceed to a deeper, bigger acute problem, that is, possibly life could be in jeopardy kind of problem. Therefore, passing out is something that's very important for a person to absolutely seek medical care for if that occurred, possibly acutely at the time, seek medical care, but also if a person passes out and then woke up and they decided they were okay and they were able to get back into the activity they were in the middle of, that could potentially not be such a good thing. They actually still should seek medical care because it's very important for a doctor or other healthcare provider to take steps to define as best possible the cause of that passing out spell or episode. It's a big deal. I want us all to know full well that indeed it's a potentially big deal and it needs to be handled wisely by the person or the person's caregiver and handled wisely by the doctor or other healthcare provider, of course. And, for instance, if a person passes out and it's not something that's understandable as to why they passed out. And here I got to take a little break and say, What do you mean understandable why somebody passed out? And then it's only, it's only that I got to say something like, you know, some people can have what we call a vasovagal reaction, like, you know, where they get weak-kneed and then pass out, such as, and where I see it, where we see it in the medical world, is some people react that way when they're going to get their blood drawn. They can pass out. It doesn't happen very often, but it's that vasovagal reaction. But the problem is that if you witness somebody passing out, you don't know if they had an okay, it's understandable, and they're going to be fine vasovagal reaction, or they had a passing out spell from something more significant, something that's potentially life-threatening. So we have to treat everybody, unless there's somebody there to say different, we have to treat everybody in that absolutely we don't know this person needs medical care. That's what we need to do because it's potentially life-threatening, some of these causes. And it needs to get figured out why. Then the other thing that I need to say before I forget, for people who pass out, other than that vasovagal thing when you're having your blood drawn kind of thing, you know, I don't want to worry people if they're having that kind of thing, necessarily worry them. But everybody else who's passing out, you just need to hear this. If you or a loved one or family member or friend or something passes out and we don't know why, it's important to know that that person is not safe to drive. If they had a spell while they were driving, that would be catastrophic, potentially. Correct? So, consequently, consequently, if there's a passing out spell in somebody, they should not drive an automobile or other vehicle until it is determined that they are safe to do so. And by determined to be safe to do so, I mean determined to be okay and safe by a doctor or other healthcare provider. Remembering this passing out subject is a very important subject. Now, in explaining that kind of stuff, if I've said something that you don't quite understand or you're wondering, you know, like, oh, I passed out, da, 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 I mean, I can't drive, and you're freaking out about it or something, well, you need to talk with your doctor about it, absolutely, your doctor or other healthcare provider. If that happened to you and you don't have a provider and you don't have health insurance or something, we have a free, so you couldn't go to somewhere, you know, you'd be restricted on healthcare availability. I just want you to know that we have a free clinic in Chico, Shalom Free Clinic, Sunday afternoons, 1 to 4 in the afternoon, no appointment necessary. It's called the Shalom Free Clinic at 1010 Mangrove. 1010 Mangrove, Sunday afternoons, 1 to 4, no appointment necessary. Again, passing out is an important subject, and it's best for us all to be on the same page relative to details on how to handle it. Okay, now I got to get to lightheadedness and what to do about that. When you get that, remember, if a person's having symptoms of lightheadedness and feeling like they could pass out, I hope you all know this, but it just has to be said, and that is, you need to sit down or lie down. That's important. So lightheadedness, feeling like you could pass out, you got to sit down or lie down. You don't want to be walking around and then fall out. and then you need some help with that. In other words, you need to have that figured out while you have that, oh, I'm going to pass out feeling. So you need to seek medical care, or someone who's with you needs to help you seek medical care. Now the subject of high blood pressure. Maybe it's best, so that was, I just finished the kind of a section on low blood pressure-ishness. Now I'm going to talk about high blood pressure. Maybe it's best for us to start with, put our heads together relative to why we'd even care about it, what can happen relative to our health if we're running around with high blood pressure over years. I always have trouble saying stuff like this because I don't like talking in a kind of scary terms, you know? It's not my desire to try to scare anybody. I don't like that. But it is my desire, and I feel a need, to do my best to make sure we all have access to information, and information that I feel is important for us all to have access to. That's why I do this darn radio show, actually. So here goes some sharing about potential consequences of high blood pressure over years of time for people, we human beings. I have four conditions that I'm going to tell you about that you are at increased risk for in your life if you are having high blood pressure untreated, if you have high blood pressure not being treated adequately over your life. These four conditions you're at increased risk for. The first one, congestive heart failure. That's when the heart kind of poops out. It poops out in its ability to pump the blood as well as it used to. It doesn't come on real quick. It takes coming on over years in this case. Now, there are other causes of congestive heart failure, too, that can be much more sudden in onset. But the congestive heart failure that comes from high blood pressure over years does happen to be the most common cause of congestive heart failure in human beings. And I suspect most of you listening to this today are human beings, right? It's the most common cause of congestive heart failure is high blood pressure over years without adequate treatment. It's again, it's where the heart is having to work extra hard over years to pump blood against a blood vessel system, the arteries, that have too much pressure in them. So that heart has to pump, it's more difficult for that heart to pump blood into the artery system if there's a lot of pressure in the artery system. It makes the heart work harder. And that's why it begins to end up in a situation we call failure, congestive heart failure. And that, oddly enough, the muscle of the heart actually enlarges, and then over time, as it's pumping harder, and then it gets to a certain point of largeness that the function of the heart just starts going down. It's I think that's called the Starling curve, but I'm not sure about that. Anyway, congestive heart failure can be a consequence. Another at risk when you have high blood pressure over time that you're not having treated is a heart attack. In other words, MI or a myocardial infarction. It increases the likelihood for that. Next thing, the third thing, it increases the likelihood for or risk for a stroke. Other name for that is cerebral vascular accident or CVA. That's a stroke. And the causes are varied for stroke, but the two main things are an infarction can happen in a blood vessel. In other words, a blood vessel that's got plaque or pieces of plaque or blood clots in it can cut off the blood supply in that area of the brain. And another cause of stroke can be bleeding out of an artery in the brain, either by aneurysm, which is a balloon-like swelling in part of an artery, bursts and bleeds in the brain, or that thrombotic thing where an artery blocks up with plaque or blood clots in it, that injury to an artery can make it bleed a little too. So the two kinds of stroke are kind of like the same kind of like a heart attack, but in a brain, plus the bleeding thing, and you're at increased risk for that if you have high blood pressure untreated over years. The last thing I'm going to talk about that I hate to have to talk to you about, all these things, by the way, but is kidney failure. You're at an increased risk for the kidneys to not work well if you have high blood pressure untreated over years. And our kidneys, we have two kidneys, one on each side, and they filter our blood. And when we have high blood pressure high over years, the kidneys can stop being able to filter the blood as well. And high blood pressure untreated is the most common cause of kidney failure, even before diabetes. My understanding is high blood pressure over years is the leading cause of kidney failure, even before diabetes is. Okay, so all that said, the reason to treat blood pressure or to know if you have a high blood pressure and then get it treated and stay with treatment and know that the treatment is okay is all about prevention. It's all about preventative medicine. It's all about trying to prevent heart attacks, strokes, congestive heart failure, and kidney failure, and other things. So it's all about prevention. Think of it that way, please. Now I'm going to talk about blood pressure numbers. First of all, a normal blood pressure reading for one person might not be normal for another person, so you got to ask your healthcare provider what's the right blood pressure range for you. If you don't have a provider, and to ask, well, listen to me now because I'm just going to go into some general information about that. First, some basics of actual numbers relating to blood pressure. Some basics about the numbers. First of all, blood pressure consists of two numbers that we write them down. One number, then we make a slash, and we put the second one number underneath the slash mark. And it's a little hard to explain on the radio, but there you go. The top number above the slash mark, I affectionately call the top number. And the bottom number below the slash, I affectionately call the bottom number. Or technically, you could call the top number the systolic pressure and the bottom number the diastolic pressure. The top number, the systolic, represents the pressure inside the arteries of the body each time the heart is actually doing a beat. That is, each time the heart is actually doing a squeeze as a pump, that pressure is the top number. The bottom number of your blood pressure, or the diastolic, represents the pressure inside the arteries of the body between each actual heart squeeze. That is, in that very brief little rest period between each squeeze or beat of the heart is what the bottom number pressure represents, or the diastolic pressure represents. So the heartbeat, is when it's squeezing its blood in the artery system, and the fraction of time between the two occurring. And so again, relative to pressure within the arteries that we're measuring here, called the blood pressure, the top number, the systolic, is the pressure in the arteries when the heart is doing its squeeze, and the bottom number, the diastolic, is the time between beats, the pressure in the arteries during that time. Again, remember that everybody's blood pressure is different. That is, it's unique to you. However, we do have some general kind of framework or range relative to what we consider within normal limits for blood pressure. And again, remember, though, also, every one of us, our blood pressure changes minute to minute, and especially when we're doing activities, you know, it's up then, and then it has, you have to rest for it to go back down. Therefore, when I give you this range of normal blood pressures to stay within, it's the standard is that it's actually when the person is at rest, specifically is at rest. And when I say at rest, I mean hopefully at rest for several minutes. In other words, at rest doesn't mean like you're walking around or you're busy or you've just been out for a jog and then you sit down and immediately take your blood pressure. No, that ain't adequate rest. That ain't at rest. Ain't. You've heard that word before, I hope. You know, and when you go to your healthcare provider's office or the emergency room and you're kind of in a tizzy and all that kind of thing, or you've just been walking around and they do your blood pressure, it might be a bit higher than it normally is. But so listen to what they tell you your blood pressure is and know that fact. But I want you to also know that that's not the standard timing for testing whether your blood pressure is normal or not for you. You want to do it at rest, adequate rest. Hence, especially for people who are being treated for high blood pressure, most of us nowadays advise that people do their own blood pressure testing at home with some kind of regularity, and then inform your healthcare provider with your numbers when you talk to them. It helps to define in the best way possible where your blood pressure is most of the time if you do your own home blood pressure testing in your own kind of life setting. That's very important and helpful information for you and your healthcare provider to share. So resting blood pressure numbers, and this is in adults, by the way, T late teens and older are, the top number, the systolic, is best if it's in the 100 to 130s zone or so, most of the time, at rest. That's the general advice for the general public. So top number, systolic, in the 100 to 130s zone for the general public. Here's a little side note on that. However, let's talk a little bit about young general public adults. And let's talk a little bit about older general public adults. The top number for young adults, remember how I just said for adults it's 100 to 130 zone is the normal? Well, young adults, their top number, the systolic, can actually be in the 90s. And that's fine for healthy adults, young adults. So in the 90s is fine for the top number in young, healthy adults. However, I get nervous if anybody, including young, healthy adults, if their top number is in the 80s or less, it makes me nervous. It's too low. However, if, on the other hand, you're someone, any adult age, who is being treated for high blood pressure and you're on medication as part of the treatment for your high blood pressure and your systolic, the top number is in the 90s or lower, 90s and lower, and it's staying there, then that could be a problem. That's too low. You got to talk to your doctor about it or healthcare provider about it. So if you are being treated for high blood pressure with medication and the top number, your systolic, is in the 90s or lower, that's actually probably too low. You better talk to your doctor. There may be something that's going on that they need to find out about, or you may need a medication adjustment. But you need to communicate it nonetheless to your healthcare provider. Also, relative to the treatment of high blood pressure in people who are older, like elderly in their 70s and older, some of us, you're really definitely in that case, when you're in the 70s and older, when you're being treated for high blood pressure, you need to know what range of blood pressure your doctor or healthcare provider is advising you to have, because sometimes we don't get quite as aggressively. We don't ask for the blood pressure to be quite so as low as we do in a younger adult, in younger and middle-aged adults. So elderly, we might be happy with that top number being a little higher. At least I might. This is me talking about me as a doctor. I might be okay with somebody in their 70s or 80s or 90s if their top number, if they're being treated for high blood pressure, if their top number is in the 140s, maybe even sneaking into the 150s. It depends on the case. So it's very important to discuss this with your healthcare provider. Now let's talk about the bottom number, which is called, what is the bottom number called? Oh yeah, it's called the diastolic. The bottom number. remember, we're talking about adults here, and we're talking about it at rest. And remember that bottom number is the pressure within the arteries of the body at the time, each time between beats, when the heart is not beating, but the heart is actually at rest between beats. That's the pressure that is being determined that we call the diastolic or the bottom number on the blood pressure. So the bottom number diastolic that we generally feel is best is when it's in the 60s to 80s. That is 60s, 70s, 80s. If, however, your bottom number gets up into the 90s and stays there or higher, that's actually higher than is generally advised for people, even the elderly. In my mind, in my book, even the elderly, the diastolic, the bottom number being in the 90s or higher is probably not a good idea. So that needs to be dealt with your a doctor or other healthcare provider. So, in brief, the general public for adults, the normal range of blood pressure is approximately 100 to the 130s for the top and 60s to 80s for the bottom. And you might be saying, hey, Dr. Logan, that's quite a broad range of normal. And if you did think that it's a broad range of normal, I would say, hey, thank you very much for paying attention, because I agree with you. There is a wide range of normal there. So 100 to 130s on the top number and 60s to 80s on the bottom number. So again, that's for a general public adult. And remember that we're all different. We're all individuals. And if you're, it's best to talk with your family doc, or I'm sorry, your healthcare provider, whoever it is, about that and find out what the range is best for you. And if you're a person who's being treated for high blood pressure, you definitely got to be on, you and your healthcare provider have to be sure you're on the same page as to what blood pressure range you're shooting for. Okay. Now let's talk a little bit about blood pressure testing at home. but first, let me just say this. Of course, some blood pressure testing that you're going to get is the blood pressure testing that's done at your healthcare provider's office or other professional places such as dentist's office or other healthcare professional offices. So that's great. Of course, pay attention to that. And remember what I said about the standard way when we're deciding what normal is on a blood pressure is when it's measured in a resting state. And so if you're like me and you're at the dentist, I may be sitting there. I might have just got there and sat in a chair. First of all, I haven't sat there for a long time yet. And number two, I might be a little nervous. I might be looking at the needles and all that kind of thing that's sitting next to me. So know full well that that's actually not the standard way or place to lay down the information of what your blood pressure really is at rest. Just letting you know that. Pay attention to what they tell you, but then understand the ins and outs of that kind of testing. And again, remember, what I'm saying is home blood pressure testing is a good idea. That's something that's gotten more popular here over the last 10, 15 years, and I'm totally on board with that. However, there's distinctly some important points about doing it that I'm gonna go into here now, please, from my opinion. So now there's a variety of companies that make and sell self blood pressure testing kits. You get them at pharmacies, all kinds of pharmacies, and you can find them at yard sales, that kind of thing. These are usually digital readout types, most of them allowing a person to either plug it into the wall or use batteries. It's usually an option, both options available on the same rig. It's pretty handy. Here's some specific advice on their use. First of all, remember me saying, when you're testing, be at rest and a bit of time at rest. Second, and by a bit of time, you're probably wondering what that means. I am too. It depends on the person, but I'd say, I don't know. 15, 20 minutes at least, I would say. That's a generality. Second point, have your arm a bit elevated on something, such as on the arm of a chair that you're sitting in, such as if you're in a, you know, a stuffed chair of some size. You know, put your arm up on the arm of that, your arm up on the arm of the chair. Or if you're sitting at a countertop or a table, put it up there. And have your arm relaxed, and do not have your arm at your side. And it doesn't matter which arm, either arm. and people have asked me this all my professional life. Our blood pressure different on one side as the other? You shouldn't take it on this side. You shouldn't take it on that side. It doesn't matter. That's what I say. It doesn't matter. Basically, our blood pressures are the same in right arm and left arm. For all practical purposes, they are the same. As a matter of fact, your artery, the pressure in your arteries throughout your body is the same, basically. So the only reason you might not do it in one arm compared to another is if you've had some kind of surgery where your lymph, let's say if you've had breast cancer and you've had the lymph nodes removed in your armpit, axilla. You'll know this already. They tell you, don't use that arm. Don't pump a thing up on that arm. But otherwise, or if you have a sore arm or, I don't know, had an old injury in that arm, well, use the other arm. Now, here's a third important thing is the blood pressure kit that I ask that's most accurate and therefore that I ask people to get is one for use on the upper arm, not the wrist. Upper arm testing is the standard. And that's where we get the numbers from. And it's so that's standard, upper arm, that's the best. I've been taught that the wrist type blood pressure testing can actually not be accurate and can even read you higher than you really are. So upper arm testing. Fourth, relative to the part of the blood pressure kit that goes on your arm, it's called the cuff or the thing that goes around the circumference around your arm. It's best to have it situated in a way on your upper arm so that the lower aspect or lower edge of that cuff is as close as you can get to the crease on your arm. In other words, on the opposite side of your elbow, you know, the crease on your arm. You want the lowest aspect of that blood pressure, the cuff, to be close to that crease. You know, either right at the crease or half inch or an inch above the crease would probably be okay, but no further up than that. You do not want the lower edge of the cuff to be further up your arm because it too could make your blood pressure reading less accurate and actually read you higher than you actually are. I was going to go off on a case I was thinking of about that, but I'm going to leave that alone right now. Okay, then the fifth point, if you happen to have a large arm, that is, if the circumference of your arm, in other words, the going around of your arm, is large, such as because you work out and you got like Mondo muscles there, or it's large because of fat, then you will have to be mindful of that fact when you obtain a self blood pressure testing kit because you might possibly need a larger cuff than the standard adult cuff. It's fairly common to need a larger cuff. The bottom line is, I say it this way, you can't go wrong by having the cuff big. You can go wrong by having the cuff too small. Let me say that again. When you're picking out or finding blood pressure cuff sizes, the thing that goes on your arm, it's hard to go wrong by getting it too big. It's hard to go wrong. It's easy to go wrong. It's more common to go wrong by getting too small or too short a cuff for your arm. And you'd say, well, how would I really know? And here's how you can know. This is how I was taught. When you put the cuff on your upper arm, as I described, the part of the cuff that holds the air. You know, when you push the button on the blood pressure machine, the motor in that machine is putting air into this system and into this cuff on your arm. And the part of the cuff that's holding the air is a rubber part underneath the fabric. And that rubber part, we call it the bladder part of the cuff. And that bladder or rubber part of the cuff that holds the air needs to at least go 2/3 of the way around your arm, at least. If it is shorter than 2/3 of the way around your arm, the bladder part, the rubber part that's inside the material, the part that's getting the air, if it's less than 2/3 of the way around your arm, it's too small and it's going to read higher than you really are. It's fine to be too much, too long. It's not good to be too short. It needs to at least go two-thirds, the bladder part, the rubber part that holds the air of the cuff, needs to at least go two-thirds of the way around your arm or more. If you have trouble finding a large enough cuff at the pharmacy, then ask the pharmacist, and they'll either order it for you, and if they can't, then go to a different pharmacy. You'll find them. They're out there. Okay, the sixth and final thing that I'm going to say about home blood pressure testing here. It just makes sense to sometimes check your blood pressure in people, you people, test your blood pressure sometimes, both sitting and standing. Especially here, if you're somebody who has symptoms of lightheadedness, and then when you take your blood pressure, it's okay, or when you go to the doctor, they say it's okay, but you still have lightheadedness, you better be testing your blood pressure not only sitting, but also standing. In all of us, it's fairly common for our blood pressure to be slightly lower when we stand, but or about the same. Compared to sitting and standing, we're generally about the same, maybe a little bit lower when we stand. But it is not okay if your blood pressure when you stand is too low, is going into the low range. In other words, less than 100 on that top, the systolic. That is not okay. Something's wrong. It's not allowed. And you need to have help about that. You need to see your doctor, and they need to help you figure it out. Or if you're on blood pressure medicine, you need it adjusted. You just need to talk to somebody about that. So if you have high blood pressure and you're testing your blood pressure at home also, be sure to let your healthcare provider know what your numbers are when you meet with them, you know? You might be wondering, how often should I do the testing? And my answer to that question is, I don't know. You need to ask your healthcare provider that question. You know, some people test it every day. I have some patients who test it twice a day. But there are people who test it once a week, maybe once every 2 or 3 weeks, maybe once a month. Or I have patients who have home blood pressure test kits and don't even do it. And, well, that's a waste of money, buying the kit. Again, I am a pusher for people following their own blood pressure at home because of the ups and downs of blood pressure in our lives and in our days. It's standard advice now. I'm not the only one pushing for us to, especially people who are treated for high blood pressure, to have their own blood pressure cuff at home and to get a very good feel for how to do it. Testing at rest, good rest, putting it on their arm correctly, and having their arm positioned correctly, and then keeping track of their numbers. And by the way, when you write down your blood pressures and you're doing that for your to talk to your healthcare providers the next time about, well, not only write down the date, the time of day, and the blood pressure reading, and you'd say, time of day, what about the time of day, and testing your blood pressure, and I'd say, you would ask me, what's the best time of day to test your blood pressure? I would say, yes. That's the best time. Yes is the answer. In other words, variety of times, day and night. I mean, I wouldn't wake up in the middle of the night to do it, but, you know, in the morning, yeah, do some in the morning. Middle of the day, yeah, do some in the middle of the day, but rest first. And then, yeah, do some in the evening, and yeah, maybe some before bed. And then, in other words, do a variety over the times that you're testing. And when you're writing it down, please record it so you can have information for your healthcare provider. Let me tell you, it's like gold. It's good information. It helps them think about how to handle your blood pressure issue. And, have a variety of times on your list. There. I sure beat up the issue of blood pressure, didn't I? Maybe I'm going to quit now on blood pressure. I'm going to move on to something else. How about that? Well, you might have thought that I wasn't going to talk about COVID virus. Well, the pandemic is still here, so guess what? I'm going to talk about COVID virus. And I was going to talk about the status. And we all know that it's easing up, at least in our country. You know, in Hong Kong and various other places, it's going the opposite, right? They're like over the top now with cases. So remember, so here's what I'm saying. Let us all remember that viruses like COVID and other viruses, they just don't play by any set of rules that we'd like them to. We do our best to understand how these viruses work and what they do, but of course, much is a mystery, right? For instance, let's keep in mind that these viruses, like COVID and like influenza, for instance, are changing viruses. They are changing viruses that are ongoing with mutations occurring. It's part of what they do. Mutations happen. It's kind of like the old saying that I can't say on air, that I have to change it on air. It's like, feces happens, okay? Hey, yeah, feces happens, man. Well, in these viruses, mutations happen. Whoa. Therefore, I know we all want to be so done with this COVID thing, but we need to continue. I say we need to continue using other parts of our brain also, not just using the part of our brain that says, I'm tired of this, but also using parts of your brain that where you can do wise thinking and common sense. Use that part of your brain also, wise thinking and common sense. And currently, what I mean by this is, let's not get too carried away with living our lives too much like the darn virus wasn't even here. Oh, don't do that. Specifically, I mean this. For now, the pandemic is not over. It is not, the virus is not gone. No matter, and it's going to be mutating again. You know that. I know that. No matter what you want, or no matter what you wish was the case, it's still pandemic. So, and it's still going to mutate. So, my advice is to remain wise relative to doing these things. And maybe you won't like these things I'm going to say, but I don't pick things that I think you're going to like to hear when I pick things to say on this show, but I pick to say things that I like to speak about what I understand to be the truth. So here goes. Wear a mask when in public places, such as shopping, and, by the way, when at school and at work, etc. Wear a mask. Still, continue physical distancing as best you can when you're around other people. Next, meeting with people is best done outside as opposed to inside. Next, avoid crowds. Yeah, I said avoid crowds. And finally, and very importantly, COVID vaccinations are essential for us against this virus, including to be up to date relative to getting your booster. I saw a patient the other day, or talked to him over the phone, and he'd got his regular set of, you know, initial two shot series initially, and he hadn't had his booster yet. And I go, how come you haven't had your booster yet? And he goes, oh, I didn't know I needed to do that, or, you know, I didn't know if I should do that. And I, so, holy cow, everybody. Adequate vaccinations are appropriate. We're a little, we have our heads in the sand too much here in Butte County, more than certain other, many other areas around the country. We kind of got our heads in the sand. In other words, our vaccination percentage is kind of low, Butte County. I don't know if you know that, but we're not doing such a good job. We're doing a little better now, I'm not proud of that. You know, we need to remember that using the wise part of your brain, the common sense part of your brain, I'd say do that. And that means get vaccinated and then adequately boosted. And what that means is after the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine original, 6 months after that, it's time for your booster. If you originally got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, it's less adequate. So that needs a booster in 2 months after that. So again, like you've heard on this show before, my advice, don't get a Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine. Don't. Get a Pfizer or a Moderna. And then in 6 months, get the booster. And now many of us have had the booster back, you know, December. Or earlier, maybe. And so November. So maybe 6 months after that, we're going to need another booster. Probably. We all have to keep our ears open because we're going to need to know when our next booster is advised. We need to use our wise part of our brain. Oh, gosh. I want to say something real quick. I want to say there's a vocal group called the Urgency of Normal group. And there are some wacko physicians and scientists. So if you want to hear about that, there's an article, Urgency of Normal. They're wackos. And there was an article in the New Republic by Melody Schreiber about that. But another place I read about it was in the Health Justice Monitor, March 2nd public. It's an email publication. Health Justice Monitor, which has some good opinion, information, updates and opinion, I might add, which I think is a good thing. Health Justice Monitor. The deaths per day are still averaging around 1,200 in the United States of America. 1,200 a death. Deaths, we're over 6 million deaths in the world. Even mild COVID cases and other COVID cases in the British, in the AMA Morning News, I read about a British study where people are having, not only they're determining some decreased brain tissue, but also decreased cognitive or thinking function in people, even mild cases of COVID compared to the people who haven't been infected. So COVID sucks. Get vaccinated, get boosted, have a nice day. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Mountain Sports. For over 45 years, providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, backpacking, which I love to do too, camping, traveling, and enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. and 10 to 4 on Sunday at 176 East 3rd Street in downtown Chico. You probably should know that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. They are actually my opinions. Stay tuned. Thank you very much, Megan Hammer.
Oh, thank you.
The engineer for the show. I'd be swimming in the ocean without a paddle without Megan Hammer. Thank you very much, Megan. And please stay tuned to Planetary Radio. And you're going to listen to a little, who is it? The
Steely Dan, right?
Steely Dan does Dr. Wu. And then the Doctor's Inn. Next, the third Thursday of each month, 6 to 7, Dr. Wu.
Side of no tomorrow. You walked in and my life began again. Just when I'd spent the last piastre I could borrow.